Welcome to another chapter of Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast, where we give you a deeper look into your favorite Christian authors and the inspirations, research, and methodology that goes into writing the books you love to read. Here's your host, Jamie Vaughn.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jamie Vaughn with Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast. Today, it's sponsored by M.D. House, an independent Christian fiction writer and author of I Was Barabbas and the sci-fi novel Patriot Star. You can follow M.D. House at M.D. House Live. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's good to speak with you.
I know it's been almost a year. And the last time you were here, we were talking about the second book in your trilogy, and it was called The Pillars of Barabbas.
Yes.
And today we're here to talk about the Barabbas legacy. Mm-hmm. Remind everybody how the idea of this trilogy came about.
Sure. So I'll take a step back. I wanted to be an author for a long time. Mm-hmm. And even in college, I started writing some things and thought, well, I could do this. I could become this, right? Mm-hmm. And I was kind of risk averse and thought, well, I probably need to pick a different career that I can more securely find a job and support a family and those sorts of things. And so I kind of chickened out, to be honest, and chose a different career. And plied that course for 25 years, and then had an opportunity to come back to this, mm-hmm. and do what I really wanted to do from the beginning, and that is to write stories and to share some of my thoughts on life and how we all get through this together through some of these stories. Mm-hmm. And so I originally thought I would just write science fiction. That's what I enjoy reading the most. I enjoy fantasy as well. Have some favorite authors there. And I thought, well, I'll just write science fiction and fantasy. And I did write a science fiction book. That was my first novel called Patriot Star. And it's a really long novel. It's 800 pages long. And I'm actually working on the sequel to that now. Many, many years later, I'm working on the sequel. And it didn't really go anywhere. And I didn't have time to really make it go anywhere because I had this full-time career and lots of other responsibilities and a family and church responsibilities. And it just didn't go anywhere for quite a while. So now I can come back to it. And then I had this idea, just thinking about this story as I was reading the scriptures again, about Barabbas and Pilate and Jesus and that scene and how the Jews demanded that Barabbas be the one released instead of Jesus of Nazareth. And Barabbas may very well have been named Jesus as well. And Barabbas meaning, son of Abbas or son of the father. And so they were both kind of son of the father. But Barabbas was the one that was released. What a fascinating story. And I thought about, and I'm not the first one, obviously, to have thought of this. Other people have written about this. But I thought, well, how do I imagine what his life might have been like? Mm-hmm. And I started putting that story together. And I never imagined it would become a trilogy. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the first book and was very happy with it. And then I thought, well, I could go further with this because I had gotten into the life of Paul. Paul becomes Barabbas's mentor in all three books. And I'd really gotten into the life of Paul, and I'd come to understand Paul better because of, you know, additional research I did in the New Testament about Paul and everything that he wrote. And I got to know Cornelius a little bit better. We don't know a lot about Cornelius either. We have that dramatic story where he receives an angel. And Peter has this vision, and then Cornelius becomes the first Gentile baptized. Mm-hmm. And so I get to know Cornelius, and I really like his story as well. And I take him to some interesting places, and I wanted to continue that. So I said, well, I'm going to write a second book. And that became Pillars of Barabbas. And then I thought, well, people usually write trilogies, right? And there's more I could do. So I'm going to do a third book. And I thought, well, maybe I'll wait a year and do the third book. Some things happened and people were making comments, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to get the third book done. And so I got it done a lot faster than I had intended, mm-hmm. and actually launched it in December. So in the same year as Pillars, I launched the Barabbas Legacy, mm-hmm. and this became the capstone. And we get to deal with some other world events that are really fascinating, like the year of four emperors, mm-hmm. and the siege of Jerusalem. And we get to think about, well, what did the saints, you know, think about those things? How did they react to them? How did they react to losing half of the apostles within about a 10-year time frame. How did they react to Jesus the Just's death? Sorry, James the Just, Jesus's brother, James the Just's death. All of that became really interesting. And I started to think about themes like, well, how do I apply that to today? The world is on fire around us today. We have two dueling kingdoms, if you will. The kingdom of Satan is rising. It is becoming more powerful. We see that every day. At the same time, Christ's kingdom is rising as well and becoming more powerful. And I see evidence of that every day. And we know where that's all leading, and we know who wins in the end. And we have to make a choice. Do we increase our efforts to bring Christ's coming to pass? Or do we sit back and say, well, I already am a believer, and I'm just going to wait until he comes and everything's going to be fine. Because I know I'm on the winning side, so I don't have to do as much. And my encouragement to people is get yourself on the side that's more energized to bring his coming faster, right? To do the work that he needs us to do, not only so that maybe he can come sooner, but so that more people welcome him when he comes, right? That's really the ultimate goal, is to get as many people as possible together to welcome him when he returns again. And the you know, the saints in the early days were thinking the same kinds of things.
And how do you do research for this type of book?
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of biblical scholars out there who do a lot of great work, and they look at a lot of secular work that's been done, secular histories that have been written. But what we're finding more and more, and this is just so fascinating, what we're finding more and more is that the New Testament itself is our most accurate historical record. And even the Old Testament is really accurate for the time frames that it covers. It used to be, and I read this fascinating book by Eric Metaxas, who published it just recently, called Is Atheism Dead? I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have.
But it's a play on the Time article from 1966 that said, Is God Dead? And at that point, you had all these scientists in the world claiming that they had definitively proven that God could not exist, right? They had the cat by the tail. And now what really has happened, God was never in danger of being eclipsed by modern science. What was happening is modern science was slowly starting to catch up with where God is, right? With what he knows. And so over those intervening years, the same scientists in some cases have now proven that God has to exist. Now they'll call it an intelligent designer, but God has to exist. And so scientifically, they can prove that the only reason we're here is that somebody did something to get us here, right? To make sure we could be here and exist and do the things that we do. And so there's all of this biological and chemical and physical evidence that's out there now that they've discovered. And then at the same time, they're finding all of these archaeological evidences. It used to be that people thought that King David, for instance, was a mythical figure, sort of like King Arthur. And maybe he was a composite figure of a bunch of legends or maybe a bunch of real people that someone just cobbled together into a mythical person. And that's what a lot of even biblical scholars thought. King David was just a representation, right? He wasn't a real person. And then since then, we've found archaeological evidence that indicates that the societies that lived in the area, they knew who King David was. They knew who King Hezekiah was. They knew, you know, all of these kings and such in Israel and the prophets even, they knew who they were. And so we now have corroborating evidence that shows us that the writers of the Old Testament weren't just making it up.
Right.
They were telling a history, right? Along with, you know, the teachings of the gospel along with it. And then the New Testament is the same way. They're finding more and more evidence. Like what was the one recently? Peter's Peter's house near the Sea of Galilee, and how it was a meeting house for the saints. And they found evidence that that was really the place. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that really blew my mind was, again, from the Old Testament, was they discovered the city of Sodom. Mm-hmm. They know where Sodom is now, and they know how it was probably destroyed. It was probably, and I'm not an expert on this, but it was probably what's called an airburst event, where a comet or a meteor enters the atmosphere and it gets really, really hot. And sometimes they'll just explode at some point above in the atmosphere, still above the earth. And it'll create basically a column of flame. And they had an event like this in the early 1900s that's documented in Russia, where it destroyed 80 million trees, mm-hmm. this airburst event. And they discovered the site of the city of Sodom, and they discovered that for several hundred years, nobody occupied it. Mm-hmm. Not just because it had been burned, but because of the fear mm-hmm. around it, right? Mm-hmm. God had through his prophets, had prophesied it would be destroyed. The people ignored it. It was destroyed. And people said, oh, wow, okay, I'm not going near that place. And neither are my kids, and neither are my grandkids. So really some interesting things happening. And I think we'll see more and more of that, mm-hmm. that one, proves that God exists, and two, proves that our most accurate historical records from those time periods are probably the records that we have in the Old and New Testaments. It's amazing.
It's like the scripture verse that says the rocks will cry out. Some people take that literally. I tend to take it that history proves.
Sure.
It. Yeah. So tell us the Barabbas legacy. Where does it pick up from the story of the Pillars of Barabbas?
Yeah. So in the Pillars of Barabbas, you actually end with a fairly dramatic death of one of the apostles. I don't want to give too many spoilers.
Okay.
And Barabbas and his family are in Rome. So, and that's where this death happens, is in Rome. And book three, the Barabbas legacy then picks up from there. And Barabbas and his family are traveling to northern Italy, to Trento. And I actually have ancestors that come from that area. So it was kind of fun to talk about Trento in northern Italy. They're traveling there to visit his adopted sister, Esther, who's about to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And she expresses a fear, which is common to people nowadays, and has been common for quite some time. And that is a fear of bringing a child into this evil, violent world. Mm-hmm. She's afraid of doing that, but she's a very faithful person. And so, you know, of course she's moving forward, and she has the baby, and then that baby tragically dies within a couple of days, which in that period of time wasn't all that uncommon. For babies to die shortly after birth, and sometimes for mothers to die. Mothers died much more often, obviously, back then than they do now. And so they're dealing with that grief. And that's kind of where book three starts. Mm-hmm. And then Barabbas starts to go on these different journeys. His kids have grown. They're spreading out a little bit. Cornelius's family has grown. They're spreading out. You have Cornelius appearing before Nero and before the Senate, and being judged because, you know, he supports the Christians. He is a Christian. He supports the Christians, and that thing kind of ebbs and flows, right? The persecution of the Christians, both at a common level, if you will, and at a state level, mm-hmm. ebbs and flows throughout that history, throughout that time frame. And it's unclear, you know, what people like Nero thought about the Christians, but they obviously didn't destroy them, didn't, you know, eradicate them. And so there had to have been some tolerance level there for the Christians. And like I, you know, I've looked at how how the Christians were probably treated in Judea. Mm-hmm. So you had Judea in rebellion in, you know, about that 60, well, in the 60s mm-hmm. AD. Judea was in almost constant rebellion. And the Emperor Vespasian, before he became emperor, was one of the generals trying to eradicate that rebellion in Judea. And most of the Jews were part of that. I don't know what the percentage was, but the Jewish Christians in general were not. And I think the Romans appreciated that. The Jewish Christians, and in fact, the Jewish Christians didn't hate the Romans like the Jews did, right? If you were a Jewish Christian and you understood what Christ was really teaching, you knew that the Romans were your brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. and they were just as much a child of God as you are, mm-hmm. right? And that Christ's sacrifice applied to them just as much as it did to you. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a different perspective for a lot of people in Judea, right? They didn't understand that. They hated the Romans. And the Messiah was supposed to throw off the Roman oppression, right? That was part of what the Messiah was going to do. But that obviously wasn't the mission. The mission was far greater than that. So anyway, the Roman Christians the Jewish Christians didn't rebel against the Romans. And the Romans appreciated that. And one of the interesting facts that I found is that when James the Just, who was Jesus's brother, who many say was the bishop of Jerusalem, was killed by the Jews in about 68-ish AD, that may have been one of the events that precipitated the final siege of Jerusalem, whereby basically Jerusalem was completely surrounded by four Roman legions, and basically that iron collar tightened and Jerusalem lost 90% of its population, effectively ending the Jewish state. It ended it until 1948. Mm-hmm. So just dramatic events and really, really fascinating to think about.
Yeah. Now, book one was from Barabbas's perspective. Book two really took on Paul's mm-hmm. view of Barabbas. In book three, do we have a narrator in that?
So book three is much like book two. So yes, book one is all first person from Barabbas's perspective. Book two is a mix. Some of the chapters are Barabbas speaking in the first person. Some of them are different characters like Paul, like Cornelius. Book three is the same. You have Barabbas in some cases in the first person, and then you have others in the third person. And usually I think in every case that the chapters are separated, if it's Barabbas first person, that whole chapter will be Barabbas first person. Other chapters could be more than one person, but it'll all be third person. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting to know more people. And like I said, Barabbas's kids have grown. We're getting to know them better. Mm-hmm. At the very end of the book, we're going to introduce in more detail, one of his daughters. And we really deal with both of the daughters in some detail in book three. But one of them, I've set up to do a spinoff, a really fun spinoff involving her and another apostle that we really haven't dealt with in the prior books. And it's a pretty dramatic scene at the end. So the hope is that, yeah, we can do a couple of spinoffs, but this is the last book where Barabbas will be a main character. And so you won't see him speaking in the first person anymore, even in the spinoffs.
Yeah. Now, what do you hope the readers take away from it?
Well, like I said, really, a lot of this is an expression of who I am and what I believe mm-hmm. and why it's important. And it's important to us today in terms of how we approach life, how we approach, you know, building the kingdom of God on the earth and why that's important. It's amazing. So I'm LDS, and a lot of people, I think, look at the LDS faith and say, well, you focus too much on obedience and not enough on grace. But if you take a step back and think about it, without grace, none of this makes any sense. Mm-hmm. We have no hope at all without grace. Christ's mission provided the opportunity that we needed to progress. And we progress by following Jesus, by being obedient to his commandments, by accepting his grace and showing that we truly believe in him by following his commandments. So that's been, I try to make that come through. I look at it in the same way. I'm a big fan of The Chosen. Mm-hmm. And you know, you probably know that the creators of The Chosen, Dallas Jenkins and others, have taken some criticism mm-hmm. for introducing some things that are non-scriptural. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give you one example. So in the book of John, there's a scene where they have, or an episode, I guess, revolving around Simon the Zealot and this man who's at the pool of Bethesda, and that pool would bubble once, you know, it would bubble once a day and people would rush to touch the water so that they could be healed. And he could never get there because he was crippled. And nowhere in the scriptures does it say that that man was the brother of Simon the Zealot. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence of that, mm-hmm. right? And yet in the episode, that's who he is. He's the brother of Simon the Zealot. okay, well, does that hurt anything? Does that weaken the message? No, it doesn't. And so, you know, they receive some of this criticism, and their response is, we're trying to fairly represent the message of the gospel in an interesting and entertaining way that captures people's imagination, right? So that they're paying attention and they're getting the gospel message. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to do as well. I'm taking some risks in different ways, right? I'm telling a story. This is definitely biblical fiction. Mm-hmm. I introduce things and events that we don't have evidence happened, but it's all wrapped around the gospel message and some of the events that we do know about, right?
Right.
And that's been a lot of fun. And again, I never pictured myself doing this, mm-hmm. writing biblical fiction. I didn't have any desire to write, but when I started writing, I had no desire to do this. Mm-hmm. But as I've gotten involved in it, it's just been so much fun. And I've met so many really good people, mm-hmm. not only people who do the same thing as I do, but just people who are good, faithful Christians, you know, trying to live a faithful life, trying to build the kingdom, you're trying to deal with all of the malevolence and the tragedy we deal with in this world, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many good people out there. Like I said, the kingdom of Christ is rising. It really is. And I've been able to meet so many people because of this choice to write biblical fiction. It's just, it really has benefited my life. I hope it benefits other people's lives as well.
So if somebody wants to pick up the new book or all three, where do they go?
So the first place you can go is Amazon. I do have, there's some availability elsewhere, but primarily on Amazon. Now, Amazon does do hardcovers now, so you can find book three in hardcover on Amazon. So they'll do softcover and hardcover and ebook, of course. And books one and two are available in audiobook form. And I actually have an actor right now working on the audiobook for The Barabbas Legacy. So he, in fact, this week he's working on it, and it's a different person. So I had someone do book one and a different person do book two. And I actually ended up going with a third person on book three because he did a sample for me, just blew me away. And he's, you know, he's a fairly accomplished actor and I loved it. So, yeah. So we went with him and that should be coming out hopefully within the next month or so. We'll get the audio version out there as well.
And when do you think we're going to be able to see this spinoff of Barabbas's Daughters?
I don't know. I'm working on a lot of things. I want to write a Christmas story this year. I want to start a fantasy book this year. I want to finish the sequel to Patriot Star, which is science fiction this year, which is 700 pages long. Mm-hmm. I'm on draft three of that now. And I'm working part-time in my old career. So I still have something hanging on from that first career. And I work part-time. And that part-time work has been because of a couple of the projects I'm doing, it's been trying to take up a little more of my time. So I've been working a lot of evenings.
Yeah, me too.
trying to catch up and keep caught up, right? And keep going on all these projects. So I actually don't even have the spinoff in my planning calendar yet. I don't know when I'm going to do it. I have some ideas around it. I know what the basic premise is, and it's going to be a lot of fun to do. I just don't know when yet I'm going to do it.
All right. Well, you come back when we hear your next story. We'd love to talk again.
Excellent.
Yeah. And everyone, if you are interested in Indie House's latest book, The Barabbas Legacy, you can go to indiehouselive.com or you can go to Amazon, like you said, and pick up the book. And if you like the latest chapter of the Christian Fiction Bookshelf podcast, make sure to hit the subscribe button below so you don't miss another chapter. I'm Jamie Vaughn. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast. Stay up to date on all things Christian fiction at familyfiction.com. Christian Fiction Bookshelf is produced by Ross Kluver, hosted by Jamie Vaughn, and edited by Brandon Woolham. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts so you'll never miss a chapter.